Hi everyone, this is a special episode of the Psychology of Attractiveness podcast. This episode is an extended interview with Barnaby Dixon of the University of New South Wales in Australia. The edited version of this interview was in the April 2013 edition of the podcast, but this is a full 40-minute longer conversation that we had. We were specifically talking about his most recent paper in Evolution and Human Behaviour on beards and attractiveness, but the conversation ranged a bit. We talked about some of the past research that Barnaby's done, some of the research that other people have done on facial hair, and we sort of got into a bit more detail about the methods and some of the obstacles that Barnaby faced when he was running his studies, which might be of particular interest to you if you're a psychology student and you're thinking of running a study on attractiveness, or maybe just any psychology study. When you're a psychologist, often the most difficult thing when you're running an experiment is to make sure that you control all the variables and you take account of all the different things that can bias your results. And Barnaby really helps us to understand how you can deal with some of those problems. Anyway, I'll stop prattling on now, and we'll get to the interview. I started by asking Barnaby whether there was any evolutionary explanation that he knew of for facial hair in humans.
From an evolutionary perspective, I guess given that there's no fossil record of what we call cutaneous tissues, so skin, hair, and so forth, A good starting point is to compare human beings to other living primates, monkeys and apes. And if you draw those kind of analogies between, say, hairiness in a human being, which is very patterned and sexually dimorphic, and compare it to, say, mountain gorilla's silverback crest, or hamadryas baboon fur, or capes of hair, or other adornments, You can make some assumptions about the mechanisms that could have underpinned the evolution of the beard in humans. So those non-human primates with greater secondary sexual trait development tend to have polygynous mating systems. And these traits are involved in both intersexual attractiveness, so attractiveness to the opposite sex, but also they're involved in agonistic threat displays between members of the same sex, or intrasexual competition. So as far as why human beings have evolved it, we can at least use the non-human primate model therein to make some assumptions about the mechanisms of sexual selection that could have promoted beardedness in men.
So it might just be that we have a history of a polygynous mating system, that is a mating system where males are able to maybe monopolize females or have more than one partner. And it might be part of a signaling display, almost like a peacock's tail or something like that. Right.
So that's one idea, and definitely one that I've thought about, and others have thought about as well. So there are several lines of reasoning to suggest why it could either be involved in attractiveness, the beard I'm referring to, or involved in sociosexual communication between males of rank and dominance, and even potentially threat. One line is that affects both those scenarios is that this trait emerges at puberty under the actions of androgens, principally testosterone, as it's converted into the more potent dihydrotestosterone. So as some people listening may be aware of, there are theories regarding why androgen-dependent traits have any signaling value to members of the opposite sex. And one popular one that's currently quite debated in human males is that the effects of testosterone in immunosuppression are such that males displaying highly androgenized characteristics could be wearing it as a sort of badge of quality that, of course, could be heritable to offspring, so beneficial to mate with such a male. Alternatively, it could just be a trait that augments perceptions of maturity, perceptions of social dominance, and perceptions of potential threat to a rival male.
Okay. So these are some of the biological reasons we might expect beards to be attractive or unattractive. Now, a lot of people have quite strong visceral reactions, either sort of often you find people say, I really don't like beards. You find some people might say, oh, yeah, they don't mind them, but some people have a really visceral reaction. Now, is some of this reaction possibly driven by culture? Are there some cultural differences in why beards are sometimes found attractive or unattractive?
Absolutely. Like any trait that is varies with, I guess, fashion or trend or culture, it doesn't necessarily just happen to be fashion and trend. It could be political periods, so forth. Absolutely, the beards are going to change their meaning within one particular time frame. It is going to differ, say, 100 years ago, and that there are actually some published papers on that. There's a One by a sociologist, Robinson, in the 70s, and he looked at photographs among men of a magazine, I believe a now defunct magazine called the London Illustrated News. And he looked at a time series of about, I don't know, 150 years from the 1800s into the 1900s. And what was amazing about fashions in hair, facial hair, so sideburns or mutton chops, moustache, full beard, clean shaven, combinations of mutton chops and moustache had very distinct peaks in popularity among men. So there are what you might refer to cohort effects, where men, if you like, are gauging the popularity of something and all following suit and then decaying over time, and another fashion is coming in. So mutton chops could be big in the early 1800s, and that could be superseded by a moustache, which is then superseded by clean shaven. But there are interesting peaks and troughs in popularity, and men follow a cohort effect. There's
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I think I've heard of some research that suggests something similar in respect of women's fashions in terms of how much skin is shown. So clothes can get more revealing and less revealing over time, and it's partly just this, I think, like you talk about there, where something comes into fashion, people follow the fashion, and it slowly decays. But I think there's also a link to economics there. So in certain economic circumstances, women will wear certain clothes, and I don't know if there's a similar effect with beards, but
Yes.
I guess you could possibly imagine there might be.
Yeah, there is an effect of beards. So Nigel Barber took that data that I just described in a paper in the early 2000s, and he said, well, these oftentimes cultural trends are viewed as arbitrary tastes, if you like, and have no significance culturally. They come and they go, and then we move on. He said perhaps this isn't the case. And as you point to, he used the example of hemlines in women's skirts to begin with, and saying, look, these do change with economic parameters. Perhaps the beard does a similar thing. And so what he did was he took the trends in fashion and facial hair, and he tested it against a time series of available men of marriageable age in a given year. So, and what he found was that in general, men were being allowing their beards to be longer, and also specifically the moustache, were becoming more profuse or bushier, if you like, at times when there were more males in the marriage market around. So he deduced from this that men were augmenting their masculinity and attractiveness at a time when there would be lots of other men in the potential mating market competing for females. So he went for the attractiveness angle, but it nonetheless highlights that these fashion trends are perhaps not as arbitrary as we would think.
So before you ran your study, which was published recently in the journal Evolution and Human Behaviour, there have been a couple of other studies that you and others have run on facial attractiveness and beards. So was there any general consensus in recent years about whether facial hair in men is attractive or not?
Right, so I ran, as I say, a couple of experiments to test whether or not facial hair augments men's attractiveness to women. And the preceding literature to the studies that I ran were very mixed. You could have looked at, say, Pellegrini's study in the 1970s in the US, where he found that women really liked beards. They rated them as attractive, as more socially, I guess, higher status. older, and all these positive attributes were ascribed to fully bearded faces over clean-shaven faces. But then what I note from the literature is throughout the 70s and the few papers that came out in the 80s, they were very mixed. Some studies would show beards were more attractive, others would show the direct opposite. And more recently, Nick Neave did a study in the UK using computer-generated faces varying in facial hair, and found that a kind of light, stubbly look on a computer composite face was more attractive than, say, a big bushy beard or clean-shaven. What I tried to do was test those ideas using natural stimuli, and I asked men and women, firstly, in Samoa, which is a small island in the Pacific, and women in New Zealand, which is, a more industrialized island in the Pacific, it's more European as well, whether or not they did, in fact, find beards more attractive. And overwhelmingly, they didn't. Clean-shaven was more attractive than the full beard. Huh. And in a follow-up study, I then used more graded facial hair from clean-shaven, light stubble, heavy stubble, and bushy beard. And I asked women at different stages of their reproductive cycles, their menstrual cycle, whether they were pregnant, postmenopausal, and so forth. I asked them whether or not they judged beards to be more or less attractive. And in general, full beards were less attractive than clean-shaven, followed by the stubbly, beardy looks. So those are the first two papers. And it didn't matter what stage of reproductive cycle these participants were in. Postmenopausal women had a slightly higher preference for full beards. But overall, pregnant, premenopausal, or postmenopausal women were all rating the stimuli fairly similarly.
And so, although on the podcast I do talk fairly frequently about menstrual cycle effects on women's preferences, maybe you could just give a quick pressy about why would we think that women might prefer beards more or less at different times of their cycle?
Sure. I believe in the sort of literature of human mate choice, this is something that's studied a lot, right? There are a lot of papers out there dealing with this topic. So if you imagine a masculine trait, say masculine facial shape, and of course beards being an obvious masculine trait, off the bat they're ascribed certain characteristics that are less than appealing, so aggressive and dominant and less trustworthy and so forth. And so why would they be more attractive? Well, it seems counterintuitive. And in fact, many studies of facial masculinity show that, in fact, more feminized faces are somewhat more attractive. Some of the work of Dave Perrett, the early papers that he published on that, certainly showed that feminized faces were slightly more attractive than masculinized, possibly because they're attributed certain negative personality traits, as I mentioned. However, the idea that women prefer the same face all the time and have no preferences that shift would of course ignore the fact that women have a monthly cycle wherein they become more fertile within a very brief window relative to much larger windows of lower fertility. And of course the fact that women suppress this by using hormonal contraceptives. And the hypothesis, if I can say it very quickly, is that during that fertile window, if you like, there could be a greater preference for more masculine characteristics, as those masculine characteristics signal traits, perhaps such like immunocompetence, greater competitive ability. And therefore, if you're looking to bestow on your offspring future reproductive success, then perhaps mating with a more masculine male during that brief window would be beneficial. And so I tried to test that idea using beards. And I believe no one had done that before these papers, but I hope I'm not wrong about that.
Okay, and even you might have predicted that women would prefer the more masculine trait, the stronger beards, the bushier beards, in the fertile phase of their cycle, but you didn't find that in those earlier studies.
No, the first study I did, it was not anywhere in that ballpark. There was a slight preference for the more stubbled face among fertile participants, but it didn't reach any meaningful statistical significance, at least. There was a trend, but no.
All right, so let's talk about your most recent study now. So what about this study was different, and what were you looking at with this study, and what did you change maybe in your methods going into this study?
Right, so a couple of things that we changed methodologically was before, you know, I had just asked whether or not women find facial hair more or less attractive. And of course, attractiveness is just one, if you like, a domain within a larger suite of domains that relate to mate value in general. So just because something, a trait isn't aesthetically sexually attractive, doesn't mean it isn't beneficial in other ways that relate to attractiveness. So we asked a series of other measures like how healthy are these faces, how masculine, i.e. competitive, is this male, and also how good of a father would this male make, and also how sexually attractive he was. And that was the main goal of the study, was to take it beyond just looking solely at sexual attractiveness on its own.
So you had the men come in first, though, for their photographs, because you wanted to use realistic, naturalistic, non-computer generated images of men. I imagine if you're doing computer generated faces, you know, you just press a few buttons and something like that, and you've got your images, and you had to get them to come into the lab at set times and that kind of thing. So were there any difficulties inherent in getting that done?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the issues that I raise in the manuscript, and I stick to firmly, is having a small sample size of men. I had only 10 men. And part of the reason why there is such a small sample size is owing to how tricky it is to convince men to shave their beards. Of course, men are literally and I guess emotionally attached to their beards. And so asking them to part with that for an experiment is, kind of tricky in the first instance. But also the logistics of arranging a man to come in with at least 6 weeks of untrimmed beard, then again when it's trimmed, then again with 5 days of natural growth, and then again for 10 days of natural growth was something of a, a tricky ordeal. And I also got them to pose standardized, I would say, at least as standardized as possible, smiling facial expressions, which is also not always the way this work is done. It was based on some pilot studies I'd done where I showed just the neutral shots, and women responded very, very negatively to using neutral.
So those would be a sort of passport style, no smiling, just straight face shots.
Yeah, the neutral, yep, absolutely. And people would say, these guys look, you know, like they look like mug shots for prison. And I said, well, this is the way, you know, I would explain in the pilots, that, you know, this is what people do in research. We don't want to bring emotion into it. And I said, well, maybe I could give it a shot. So I used Paul Ekman's kind of protocol for generating standardized static facial expressions. It's called the facial action coding system. And you get men to move their face in certain ways so that they only, say, raise their cheeks a certain amount. And it's very tricky to pull off. And that was another thing that also meant the photographing sessions would take a very long time.
Because you can't, because you, and it's, I think it's interesting to talk about, because I'm sure there are lots of people who are listening who are maybe students and they're planning experiments, and just the things you have to think about when you're taking photographs. You can't just ask the men to smile.
No.
You have to actually get them to follow rules set down by this chap, Paul Ekman, who's an eminent psychologist who works a lot on emotion. He has these rules, doesn't he, that say, you know, a smile comprises of moving this muscle around the eyes and that muscle around the mouth.
Yep.
So you're not just asking them to smile, you're saying, do follow these instructions, really, on how to, like a recipe for a smile, almost.
Yes, like a recipe. These protocols need to be followed in order to generate this standardized emotional expression. Now, facial expressions are powerful in eliciting emotions in respondents, right? And I was interested in whether, you know, the judgment of attractiveness would in any way be better measured by using smiling facial expressions. And there are a couple of papers in psych journals that show that, you know, an open mouth like smile over showing some teeth is rated as more attractive and so forth than, say, just a neutral facial expression. So that was another element that I tried to incorporate into the study. Of course, another for students out there that are considering doing research along these lines, one of the things that I definitely would do differently if I was to photograph more men, I would vary the order in which I took the photographs, because I began all the photographs when they were fully bearded. And of course, there could be what you would call an order effect. And it's very important to counterbalance these things in experimental design, so that you don't, say, have a participant that's just tired of being compliant with these rules you're telling them and fed up with the whole thing, or just lose interest. And
so your participants, they came in with the full beard.
Yep.
The first photograph you took of them was full beard. The second photograph was the same day, is that right? You shaved them on the same day?
No. They would typically come in, or all the men, sorry, came in with a full beard, and then I would rearrange another time for them to come in clean shaven. And I got them the morning they'd shaven their beard. Now, this might seem, at the time, I thought this is probably a good idea. I'd standardized it. These guys really are as clean shaven as they would be. But one thing I wish I'd done, I wish I'd measured their confidence after they'd shaved their beard. Because to any man out there who typically have a beard, what some of these guys would tell me anecdotally was they felt very exposed and new to the world without their beard. And I suddenly had these thoughts, like, down the track, I wish I had collected some data on just their feelings of self-confidence and so forth, having removed something that they're so used to having.
Yeah, I think I can definitely, as a bearded chap myself, I think I can definitely agree with that, because what I tend to do, I mean, it's mostly laziness. I don't shave because I can't be bothered. So I let my beard grow, and it might be weeks and weeks before I decide that it's time to tidy it up and shave it off. And I shave it off and I look in the mirror, and you suddenly think that your face looks thinner and your jaw doesn't look as strong. Because, of course, the beard makes your jaw look bigger than it really is, maybe.
Sure.
So I think I definitely would agree with that. So I guess your advice there is that if you're going to try and take photographs of people at different times, you might want to try and mix it up so that you're not capturing, say, micro expressions that indicate confidence or lack of confidence or that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Over time.
Absolutely. I would definitely say that. And of course, you point to one of the things that beards do, which is frame essentially the masculine facial characteristics, like the jaw, bring more attention to the eyes. I mean, it's interesting in that regard. And some men absolutely will probably think, God, that's what I look like without this facial hair. How strange.
So each man has come to the lab, you photographed them with full beard, you photographed them clean shaven, and two steps in between light and heavy stubble.
Yep.
But what you don't do is you don't show all four images of the same man to the raters who come to the lab to rate those images. So could you explain why you chose to do that, why it doesn't make sense perhaps to show every participant, to show them every photograph that you've taken?
Right. So, of course, that's another way of running this kind of experiment. Let's say you had two faces. You could look at the proportion of selections of one over another and look if it goes in the direction that you're interested in, having several replicates of pairs. When it comes to four faces with different degrees of beard, I guess what we were interested in was seeing off the bat what the reaction of a bearded man is, right? So you have these different men photographed, of course, varying in lots of other individual traits as well, but with or without this beard or with or without stubble. And then statistically, what you can do is you can model participants' ID, or the photographed male's ID, as a random factor, and look to see if that emerges as something that predicts, along with the beard, the attractiveness. So in the Evolution and Human Behavior manuscript, we had a design where we pulled from the pool of faces and had them rated, and then we entered the ID as a random factor in some preliminary analysis that's not included in the manuscript. And then we looked at overall global effects of beard within faces. And it's a different method to doing the paired or the four faces. I don't think it's necessarily better or worse.
I think I quite like the method because I had to make a similar decision when I was running my research on facial scarring. And I was coming from having done research on facial masculinity, where typically you'll show participants the masculine and the feminine version of the same face, and they can't really tell what the difference is. It's quite subtle, but they might show a preference for one or the other. But when, like I did in my research, you want to look at the effects of facial scarring, you have the same face, one with you've put a scar on with a computer, and the same face without the scar. The problem is the person looks at it and they can see the difference. It's really obvious, and it might sort of make them think, "Oh, am I a bad person if I don't prefer the guy with the scar?" And they start to think about it a bit too much. And that's why I think in research like yours, where you're looking at something that's an obvious difference between two images, one's got a beard and one hasn't, or stubble and or one hasn't. And that if you let people know, if you make it really obvious to your participants, "Hey, I'm doing some research on beards here," it might affect their results. But with the way you ran it, where it was just they saw a random selection of photographs, and some happened to have beards, but most of them didn't, which is what you would expect in everyday life, it makes it more difficult for them to guess what's going on, and therefore they're more likely to react naturally, I would have thought.
Yeah, that was the hope, and I completely agree with what you're saying. And again, it's another example of just when you're designing experiments, firstly, how many options are available when designing an experiment, and how you really have to consider what the outcome could be. You give the example of that paper on facial scarring, which I've read with Anthony Liddell, right? And it's absolutely the case that had you shown, you know, if you show these paired faces, I mean, one's got a massive scar, the other doesn't, or whatever. Any form of disfigurement, and in the case of a beard, a huge patch of hair covering much of the face, and not, you're going to get a very, I guess, a very strong response to that. There was recently a paper that came out that did ask women what proportion of clean-shaven and bearded faces they liked, and amongst a suite of other characteristics, muscularity and so forth. And they got a massive clean-shaven effect of, you know, something like 89% or something of the faces were selected over the beard. And I believe if you show these individual faces, you may still find it in the same direction, but it won't be as polarized. People, I guess, like you say, can't completely know what the study's about off the bat.
Okay, so now I think we can talk about what the results of your study were. So what level of facial hair did men and women think was most attractive?
Right. So the first thing we looked at was male and female comparisons for the clean, light, heavy stubble, and full beard, and we found a sex difference, which is always interesting to researchers. You can start wondering why the sexes are different, and it was in the direction of
Like I did in
women
my
overwhelmingly preferring the heavy stubble face relative to the other beard conditions, whereas men tended to rate fairly evenly the full beard and the heavy stubble, and lower scores for light stubble, and then somewhat higher scores for clean shaven. So the sex difference was that men were in general rating all the faces more favorably, but particularly the full beard was higher than women.
Okay, so I think this is quite interesting because you might think that although heterosexual men are not attracted to other men, perhaps it would make sense for us to be able to understand what it is about facial hair that women find attractive. And if women are finding a male face with, was it light stubble or heavy stubble most attractive?
The heavy stuff.
So if women are finding that face most attractive, you would have thought it would make sense for men to go, okay, well, you know, I don't personally find it attractive as a heterosexual man, but I know what women find most attractive, so I rate it the same. So why would we see men sort of disagreeing with women about what's most attractive?
Well, I guess it goes back to that question at the beginning when we were talking about why beards may have even evolved in the first place. And one idea is that, of course, it evolved for male-male communication of dominance and potential threat and sexual maturity, and all these things are probably wrapped up together. And I think tentatively I would speculate a bit and say that perhaps these men are responding more favorably to the full beard because of these kinds of constructs. Perhaps they're regarding this male as looking of higher, I guess, social status, perhaps more, I guess, dominant and threatening. And in one of my previous studies, I did show that men rated full beards as more socially dominant and also as more threatening when they're posing an angry facial expression. So,
okay. So it might not be that men are thinking, hey, that I'm going to rate this full beard as most attractive because I think women will find it attractive, but it's more about what they would like, or they see characteristics associated with the beard that they would like perhaps in themselves. It's not so much that they think women would find a full beard most attractive.
No, I think I would go more along that line of thinking. And in fact, some of the guys who came into the lab, you know, when you have people come in and you're just kind of chatting a little bit, and you learn things that you unfortunately don't collect a formal data on. But anecdotally, yeah, some of these men would say, you know, that they feel like they have more respect among their friends when they show up with a big beard, and they kind of give a bit of a nod of respect to other men with beards. And I kind of chat about these things with people. I think beards are quite interesting to most people. And so I ask guys these things just when I tell them about what kind of research I've been up to. And a lot of them say this. And I guess it's another thing that I would love one day to collect some data on.
It's one of those things that I guess women don't realise, that there's this sort of club of bearded men that, you know, it's almost like in Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, Larry David has this, the bald club, and, you know, all the bald guys nod at each other. Unfortunately, I'm in the bald club too, so, you know, I'm in two clubs.
There was a very quirky study done in the 80s that I cite in the Evolution and Human Behaviour manuscript. I've forgotten the author's name, which is bad. Sorry about that. But the study basically had guys come into the lab and wear a false beard or wear a bandana. And I guess in the US in the 80s, wearing a bandana was considered to be a very masculine and confident thing to do. And what does a beard do? Does it make you feel more masculine and confident? And this paper showed that if you get guys to come into the lab and wear a beard, they feel more confident and more masculine and more assertive. And the bandana had very little effect. So it wasn't just that this was a cultural thing of masculinity. It was a specific beard effect. So that's a cool study.
even in the fake beards, that's good.
Exactly.
Although, you know, I mean, I think it was just the kind of time that those studies, like, was it sort of a 70s, 80s type study? But when I was doing research on scars, I saw something similar. You know, they get people to come to the lab and they take a photograph of them with the scar or without the scar. And sometimes you look at the photographs of people when they've got the scar drawn on their face, and they're not supposed to be. They've been asked to give a neutral expression, but they've got this angry expression. You know, I've got a scar now, so I'm going to play the role or something. But
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Another thing I thought was really interesting about your study is that not only are you asking about attractiveness, you're also asking about parenting skills.
Yep.
So could you say a bit about why you asked that question, right, and about what you found when you asked people to rate the faces with beards and without beards for parenting skills?
Sure. So when it comes to choosing a partner, of course, there are many questions and many domains in which the direction could be altered. So a very typical way it's done is to ask what's attractive in a short term, one night stand kind of arrangement, or a long term committed partner. And I'd seen other papers asking, you know, how good of a dad would a masculine looking man make? And I thought this was an interesting idea. The idea is this is a male that could be potentially more, I guess, resource acquiring, able to hold his own in male-male competition and provide something back. Whether or not this is a real effect or not is up for grabs, but are those kind of thoughts imposed on bearded or less bearded faces? So are you more of a, you know, mature, investing, caring, resource-winning guy if you're bearded? That was the idea we wanted to test. And to my surprise, I wasn't expecting this to happen at all, but men and women rated these fully bearded men as having greater parenting skills, as being better potential father than clean shaven and lightly stubbled.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting because, like you say, you would expect, because we know from previous research that men with typically masculine, strong faces, their strong jaw lines, strong brow ridges, people tend to see those faces as more masculine and as being less likely to be good fathers. And so, like you say, I would have also thought a man with a heavy beard, we know that they're seen as more masculine. So presumably they'll be seen as being poorer fathers, but they're seen as being better fathers. So, I mean, have you got any idea? Would you like to speculate again why that might be?
Sure. So the interesting thing about the kind of perceptual social psychology research on facial hair, which spans from a smattering of papers in the 70s and 80s, a few in the 90s, and then it kind of, that's about it really. Apart from a few other papers that deal with how good of an employee would this person make with and without a beard, that what's interesting is if you take a brush stroke across these studies is you get very polarized views of the, I guess, character of a bearded versus non-bearded man. In some studies, you get very negative traits like he's dirty, he's aggressive, threatening. These are not good things, as you say. You would expect them to impact negatively on a parenting measure, if you like, a measure of parenting skill. However, there are a set of other studies that show that these men look more intelligent, more sympathetic, friendly, surprisingly. There's a suite of traits that also are highly positive, and I believe could potentially be positive when it comes to a long-term partner. So even though masculine faces, like the craniofacial shape, is correlated in a number of studies with aggressive behavior and I guess more muscularity and things that could infer a cost. Beards, I don't know of any data out there that show that beards are correlated in any way with direct male aggression. And so while they may be judged as aggressive, posing a threatening face, which I showed previously, it seems as though for a long-term mate, perhaps those positive attributes come to the forefront, and that's why they're judged as being better parents.
It would actually be interesting to if researchers were able to follow up this study and find out whether men with beards actually in the real world are seen as better fathers and whether they turn out to be better fathers, whether they invest more in offspring. Because I think we know that men with more testosterone in their system, they tend to spend less time with their children. But of course, no one's done that yet with people with beards or not. So that would be interesting to see whether women and men, if they perceive men with beards as being better fathers, whether it's actually true.
I would be very interested to know whether in the real world bearded men are in some way better investors in children, but also I'd be interested to know whether men choose to grow beards around the time where they have children for some perhaps protective signaling. Of course, these are very speculative ideas, but they would be interesting nonetheless to look at because beards, they're so easily manipulated without any particular pain to you. You can, if you want.
You can grow them quite quickly, take them off, and yeah, if you're adopting a certain role, it might make sense. I suppose, again, speculating, when you see people go, they go traveling, they go backpacking, they might let their beard grow, and I wonder whether it's partly this idea that if you're sort of renouncing concern about your own appearance in a way. I mean, if you grow a beard, it's like saying, well, I'm not vain, I don't care, and I guess that could be seen as both masculine and as something you might want in a potential father for your offspring. So I guess, that could make sense. But now I know, Barnaby, you've been interviewed quite a bit about your research, and listening to some of those interviews in preparation to talking to you today, I noticed you get asked one question quite a lot, and that's whether you have a beard or not. Now, so I've seen photos of you around the web, so I know that you either have had a beard or maybe you still have a beard. But one thing I'm particularly interested in, again, when I've given interviews about my research on scars, the question that I'm always asked is, do I have a scar on my face? And so I have to say yes, because I do, and it's not a big one, but it's just a small scar above my forehead. And people go, aha, That's why you do research on scars, and maybe that explains why you found that scars are more attractive. Okay, so what I'm actually interested in is whether doing the research on beards has made you think twice about whether you about your own facial hair and whether it makes you more like to shave it off, because of course you can get rid of your facial hair or grow it, and I can't change this scar. So does it make you more likely to change your facial hair, or are you just happy to leave it as it is?
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is that I was one of those people that shaved every day for the longest time. And this is a true story that I'm going to say. As I was starting to do the work, collecting the photographs and stuff, I was somebody who always shaved. And I was just thinking, this is a really interesting study to do. It was part of my PhD thesis at the time. I thought this would be kind of neat. And then I met my partner, who I'm now married to, and we went on a trip, and I let my facial hair grow out a little bit, and I've had facial hair ever since then. And this would have been about 3 or more than 3 years ago. So nowadays, like I do it purely for that reason. I believe I've become used to having a beard, and I sort of like it, and my partner likes it, and so it sort of reinforces that. I would have a very hard time, I think, now. Let's say hypothetically, I was enlisted in a study where I was asked to shave my beard. I would definitely not be keen on it, even though for the most part, my research has not shown that beards are particularly attractive. I don't know.
That's Barnaby Dixon of the University of New South Wales. Thanks a lot to Barnaby for taking time out of his day to talk to us on the podcast. Barnaby is currently conducting some new research on facial attractiveness and the influence of facial hair. So if you'd like to take part in that research, you can head over to my website, which is www.oraclelab.co.uk, and click on the link to Barnaby's study in the experiments section. You can find out more about Barnaby's research by just googling him, Barnaby Dixon, Dixson, and you'll find his website that way. So thanks for listening. I'll see you later in the month with a regular episode of the Psychology for Attractiveness podcast. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Rob Burris.